Blog Talk Radio.
August 31st, 2011, and you are listening to Gamer Girls Radio. It's lunchtime with Ginger and Corey, but obviously Corey's not here. She's still not feeling particularly well, so I'm sorry to disappoint you, but you're stuck with me, Snow White.
Yay, I love Snow White.
I'm so glad. Aww, I love you too, Ginger.
If I'm going to be stuck with anybody, I want to be stuck with you.
Aw, that was nice. That was nice. So, are we ready to give our dose of news? Because there's a lot.
I think we are. I do believe we are. There's so much news out there today.
It really is. What is with it? What is with today?
I have not got a clue, but it is all over the place.
No idea. All right, well, you go first. As usual, since it's your show, your name is on the show.
Oh, well, thank you. All right, well, this isn't exactly gaming-related, but it is kind of nerdy, so I'm going to go with it.
Roll with it.
We heard about the whole WikiLeaks and how they were leaking information. Well, seems like the tables have turned.
Uh-oh.
The WikiLeaks website crashed Tuesday in an apparent cyber attack. After the accelerated publication of tens of thousands of once-secret State Department cables by the Anti-Secrecy Organization raised new concerns about the exposure of confidential U.S. embassy sources. Yes, that's right, Anonymous. Looks like y'all are getting your little butts handed to you. There you go. I had to,
you had to filter.
Had to filter. It's a little bit early in the morning to be cursing. Yeah.
Nice.
All right. So the group said on Twitter Tuesday, WikiLeaks.org is presently under attack. 1 hour later, the site and cables posted there were inaccessible. WikiLeaks updated its Twitter account to say that it was still under a cyber attack and directed followers to search for cables on a mirror site or a separate search system, CableGateSearch.net. The apparent cyber attack comes after current and former American officials said the recently released cables and concerns over the protection of sources are creating a fresh source of diplomatic setbacks and embarrassment for the Obama administration. It was not immediately clear who was behind the attack, but I'm pretty sure we've got a good idea. The Associated Press reviewed more than 2,000 cables recently released by WikiLeaks. They contained the identities of more than 90 sources who had sought protection and whose names the cable authors had asked to protect. Officials said the disclosure in the past week of more than 125,000 sensitive documents by WikiLeaks, far more than it had earlier published, further endangered informants and jeopardized U.S. foreign policy goals. The officials would not comment on the authenticity of the leaked documents, but said the rate and method of the new releases, including about 50,000 in one day alone, presented new complications. So State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland says the United States strongly condemns any illegal disclosure of classified information. In addition to damaging our diplomatic efforts, it puts individuals' security at risk, threatens our national security, and undermines our effort to work with countries to solve shared problems. We remain concerned about these illegal disclosures and about concerns and risks to individuals. She goes on to say, we continue to carefully monitor what becomes public and to take steps to mitigate the damage to national security and to assist those who may be harmed by these illegal disclosures to the extent that we can. All right, so WikiLeaks fired back at the criticism even as its website came under attack. Dear governments, if you don't want your filth exposed, then stop acting like pigs. Simple. I don't think that's very smart to antagonize these people. No, not really.
It's not. And before we move on, I know this is like a non-talk show, but I just want to say I completely disagree with WikiLeaks. There is a reason that things are confidential.
Yes, yes. And while we may not always approve of how things are handled and how things are done. Unfortunately, sometimes that's the way it has to be.
Yep.
I hate it, but it's one of those evil, necessary evil things.
I agree.
And if you are putting my family and my people at risk, I'm not liking you.
And we are so having to censor ourselves.
Yes. We are, too.
I'm like having to turn on the filter. Normally the filter is off, but the filter is on today.
Yeah.
All right, so let's
see. Thursday night, though. Thursday night.
Thursday night, it's on.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I gotta say. All right, let me go ahead and do something a little happier.
Okay.
We talked about World of Warcraft yesterday for a bit, and I want to talk about the future of World of Warcraft today, and this is via IGN, so thanks, IGN, you rock. Blizzard's ever-popular MMO has been in the news for a few reasons recently. First, because subscriptions have been dropping ever so slightly, though still staying above the 11 million mark, which is a lot. Second, because at Gamescom 2011, Blizzard talked about upcoming changes to WoW, including the Deathwing raid encounter, armor transmogrification, and the Void Bank. The goal for this content patch is to give players new things to do after churning through what the 4.2 had to offer, presumably lasting up to the release of the next expansion pack, which hasn't exactly been announced yet. Game director Tom Chilton and art director Chris Robinson explain more. The Deathwing encounter sounds as though it'll be especially time-intensive. Chilton said that if you were taken into account the encounter's multiple stages, it would be longer than any other in the game. The fight takes place in multiple different environments. This is what he's saying. You'll actually potentially get loot at different points in the encounter, so it's broken up into a larger scale overall. Players will start at Wormrest Temple, and then eventually it progresses to players fighting on Deathwing's back, flying towards a maelstrom, trying to wrestle him to the ground. That sounds awesome.
Wormrest Temple?
Yeah. It's new.
Okay. So that's not neat. The, oh crap, I can't think. The level 30 dungeon used to be out.
It might be. I don't remember.
I remember with all the little voodoo guys.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't.
It had
the one that's in the middle of the middle of the lake.
Yeah.
I totally don't remember the name of that. It's something, I don't think that's it. I think it's like Azkazan Temple or something.
Yeah, I think you're right, too.
Okay.
Anyway. You're right.
Sorry, but we're a couple of WoW nerds. Anyway, moving on.
We are.
This particular article is super long, so I'm skipping some of it because I don't think you guys want to hear me read the whole thing. So, moving on. Though there will be lots of cool loot to grab from Deathwing, Blizzard realizes that eventually high-level players all wind up acquiring similar gear. Too true. For those that want to stand out in a crowd, the transmogrification feature is being added in. This lets you swap around the appearance of armor sets without altering the statistic. For a certain fee of gold, you can keep all the bonuses associated with your best stuff, but swap the new design with that of an old favorite. Though there are a lot of different ways Blizzard could have gone with this feature, including allowing players to edit the designs of armor pieces down to fine levels of detail, the system had to be kept reasonably basic, and this is a quote for you. Like, if we go down the road allowing players to really modify the texture to any fine degree, then you probably talk about ballooning the scope of the feature massively to the point where, realistically, it'd be very difficult for us to do in 4.3, said Chilton. You always hear people say, oh, Judgment, that was so cool, and every now and then they'll throw it on and stand there, but that's about as much as they get out of it. It seems like a really good way for players to be able to differentiate themselves, and that is completely true.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
Yes.
And we're gonna move on because it's a whole section on transmogrification. Skipping a lot, Blizzard sees 4.3 as one of the final content patches leading up to the next expansion. There's very likely to be a content patch from the perspective of world events that build up to the next expansion, but this will definitely be the last content patch for Cataclysm content, which is exciting. Okay.
Really? Cataclysm hasn't even been out a year, has it?
I think it has. I think it's been out for a long time.
I guess I've just been gone too long.
You have. You need to come back and play with me. moving forward beyond 4.3, Chilton explains the focus of the development team. I would say that the majority of our mindshare as a team goes toward our existing player base. How do we keep them entertained, and how do we keep them enjoying World of Warcraft? I don't know if that's necessarily the right approach as time keeps going on. If you look at it, if you look at the way the population breaks down, we're at a point in our history where there are more people that played World of Warcraft but no longer play World of Warcraft than currently play World of Warcraft. Does that make any sense?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Maybe.
That was totally not true 4 or 5 years ago, and so, in a way, the demographic of the potential returning players becomes more and more important over time. I don't think we'll ever be able to stop feeding the beast, Chilton continues. It's kind of what we call trying to keep the players entertained. You know, the guy's bored right now, and you know what are they going to do the next month? But I think that for us to continue to be successful, we have to think more and more about the new players that are coming into the game now and the potential returning players. What are we doing to the game that lowers those barriers to entry? And it continues going on, and it says, last paragraph, look for patches to be hitting World of Warcraft sometime soon, and just in case Blizzard is holding back an expansion pack announcement for this year's BlizzCon, we'll be there to report any announcements when the event starts up on October 21st. And when I say we'll, I mean IGN, not us. So October 21st, look for more announcements. Hopefully you'll get more about WoW.
Yeah, very nice. Awesome. Yeah.
That was a super long article. I'm sorry if I took too long.
No, not
super
at all.
Long.
All right, hit streets running and gunning at 3:45 games. Ugly Americans, Apocalypse Get In launches today. Yes, and I'm going to trip over this word about 1,000 times in this. All right, so four-player side-scrolling co-op shooter game based on Comedy Central's hit animated series is live on PSN today and XBLA tomorrow. All right, join Mark, Callie, Grimes, and all the rest of your favorite ugly characters and shoot your way into saving the world. 3:45 Games, the video gaming arm of Comedy Central and Spike TV, announced today that its highly anticipated top-down arcade shooter, Ugly Americans Apocalypse Geddon, launches today for PlayStation Network and tomorrow for Xbox Live for a retail price of $9.99. Published by Comedy Central Games and developed by Backbone Entertainment, this hilarious game unites the humor and spirit of the popular animated comedy horror series, Ugly Americans, with classic and addictive dual-analog shooting gameplay. The game features all of the voice actors from the show, a script penned by the show writers, and original characters created by the show creator Devin Clark. Today, gamers will get their own chance to see what everyone was raving about at PAX recently who played this game. This has come from Dan Yang, general manager at 3:45 Games. It's been a long but extremely rewarding process of working with the show's talented staff and our wonderful development team. But I'm unbelievably excited that we're here at the finish line and people can share in this hilarious and addictive experience we've worked so hard to create. All right, so coinciding with tomorrow's XBLA launch is a brand new avatar collection featuring your favorite characters from the show. Deck out your avatar with either a completely new skin or even a miniature drunk Leonard to follow you around as a pet. Oh, my God. Pricing for these avatar collection items ranged between 160 and 400 Microsoft points. With four-player top-down co-op gameplay that harkens back to such classics as Gauntlet and Robotron, Ugly Americans Apocalypse Geddon features four playable characters, each with their own unique abilities, weapons, and strengths. Players must comb the streets of New York City and pacify raving demons, delinquent man-birds, and zombies by lactating fire or hurling wacky objects like flying demon skulls, fish, baseballs, and wrenches. Investigate case files from the Department of Integration and battle devastating and distinctive bosses, each bringing you one step closer to finding out who is trying to bring about the end of days. All right, so they want us to let you know that Ugly Americans airs on Thursdays at 10:30 p.m. on Comedy Central. Ugly Americans Apocalypse Geddon will be available for $9.99 or 800 Microsoft points. Oh, my God. That sounds hilarious. Black shading fire. I want to know, do they actually mean lactating fire?
You know, that's the only definition of the word I can think of.
That, me too. So I'm like, ouch.
You know, that really makes me hurt.
No.
I'm going to have to ask him not to do that.
I'm going to have to ask you not to do that.
I'm going to have to ask you not to do that.
Oh, my God.
Okay, now I'm going to move on from lactating fire. We're going to move on to Battlefield 3 and why civilians are going to be off limits.
No more lactating fire.
Yeah, no more lactating fire for us. Rock, Paper, Shotgun has an interesting article on Battlefield 3 that explains why you can't shoot civilians in the game. Apparently, EA decided to make it so that players couldn't just gun down innocents in the game. is an interesting policy considering that some might consider taking away that option as removing some of the realism that games such as Battlefield 3 and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 are promising. The game's executive producer, Patrick Vach, said that players often want to engage in provocative behavior. In a game where it's more authentic, when you have a gun in your hand and a child in front of you, what would happen? Well, the player would probably shoot that child, he told RPS. While the choice, if it was in the game, to kill civilians would be the player's, Bach also worries that his company and his product will ultimately take the blame for it in the media. We would be the ones to be blamed. We have to build our experiences so we don't put the player in experiences where they can do bad things, he added. Bach admits that there is a degree of self-censoring the game to limit player behavior. Me, personally, I'm trying to stay away from civilians in games like Battlefield because I think people will do bad. I don't want to see videos on the internet where people shoot civilians. That's something I will sanitize while removing that feature from the game. Bach added that the games he makes are for grown-ups that he thinks games need to grow up a bit. Perhaps shooting a civilian in the face is a bit childish, but it's also harmless fun because this game is rated M for mature and therefore not for children in the first place.
He's got a slight point. I mean, it is rated mature.
It's that the CYA thing again, cover your behind.
I'm not quite for sure how I feel about the idea of they would feel the need to cover their ass for this, but darn it.
It wasn't me. Yes.
No, it was me. It was me.
In a way, I can see them having to do this because of what the media has been doing lately, how they've been blaming games left and right for everything wrong in society. So, in a way, I can see where he's coming from that, but yes, it does take away some of the realism. But then again, you have some immature people who will just mess things up for everybody. And that's what's going on.
Yes. There are a lot of immature people who will try to mess things up for everybody because they suck.
Mm-hmm. You can say that again, sister.
Mm-hmm. All right, so where did I leave this?
I don't know.
We haven't talked about the Dog of Wars yet, have we?
I don't think so.
All right, so this is coming from GamePolitics.com. It's a really short one, so I'm just going to grab it real quick. Dog of Wars hacked Trojan within Shame's users. According to a report on the mostly positive website Care2, animal activists have hacked a dog-fighting game that was removed from the Android marketplace in April of this year for being offensive. The game, simply called Dog Wars, sparked outrage among animal activists earlier this year, and a public outcry led to Google removing the game from the Android marketplace in April. Good. It doesn't need to be there. The game was still being made available on third-party sites, which is why hackers targeted the game. The hacked version of the game contains a Trojan that sends out a text to all the contacts in the player's phone with the message, "I take pleasure in hurting small animals, just thought you should know that." Hell yeah. I'm sorry, I know we're on air, but hell yeah, that is awesome. Yes,
not that we condone any type of hacking. Gamer Girls Radio and GameMatrix.com does not condone any type of hacking.
No, we don't.
At all.
We're totally cheering you on. This is awesome. All right, so Care2 offers some commentary, which mostly chastises those responsible. And you can read the whole thing over at Care2.com. You know what? Why would you even play this? This is disgusting,
I
think this hack is beautiful.
That's Ginger saying that, by the way.
That's me, not Game Matrix, that's me. But, yeah, seriously, if any of my friends, if I get a text where y'all are playing this, yeah, y'all can just not ever talk to me again. You're going to go, like, on my ignore list.
Yeah, I personally think the game is despicable.
Yes.
It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I agree, but I'm not going to say anything about the hack, because, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, this one is right up Blaster's alley again, because it has to do with Steam, and why you probably won't see Minecraft on Steam. I really hope I say this correctly. I probably won't, though. Mojang frontman Marcus Persson has revealed that the Minecraft is not, and probably will not, ever be sold through Valve's Steam service because of its restrictive terms of service. In a post on his blog, Person said that while Steam is the best digital distribution platform I've ever seen, Valve's control of the platform, which he doesn't have a problem with, limits the freedom Minecraft requires. While Person says that Mojang is talking to Valve to work something out, he also notes a certain inherent incompatibility between what his company wants to do with the game and what Valve expects from them on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
This is an excerpt, or this is actually his blog post, and I'm going to read it for you. At PAX, I got asked why we're not on Steam with Minecraft, and I had to answer the question straight out for the first time. So I'll repeat what I said on here because openness is awesome. Steam is the best digital distribution platform I've ever seen. I've spent incredible amounts of money on it, and I own a crazy amount of games on it. It runs great, offers great services like that Shift plus Tab stuff, and it remembers my credit card details, so there's no barrier for me when I want to buy a game. The only downside I can think of is that offline mode is a bit flimsy, and that the game list is sometimes full of DLC releases for stuff I don't even own, and those are some tiny complaints. But being on Steam limits a lot of what we're allowed to do with the game and how we're allowed to talk to our users. We probably wouldn't be able to, say, sell cakes or have a map marketplace on Minecraft.net that works with Steam customers in a way that keeps Valve happy. It would effectively split the Minecraft community into two parts, where only some of the players can access all the weird content we want to add to the game. We are talking to Valve about this, but I definitely understand their reasons for wanting to control their platform. There's a certain inherent incompatibility between what we want to do and what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no big argument. We just don't want to limit what we can do with Minecraft. Also, Steam is awesome, much more awesome than certain other digital distribution platforms that we would not want to release Minecraft on. So he's being very nice and very neutral with his stance. That's good.
I see that.
Well played, well played, well played.
Well played, well played. All right. GDC Online. I love this because, you know, this is totally in Texas. GDC Online reveals all-day Blizzard Google Unity tutorials. GDC Online organizers have revealed full-day sponsored events for the October show in Austin, including Google, Unity Technologies, and unprecedented Blizzard Writing Design Showcase. Taking place Monday, October 10th through Thursday, October 13th, 2011, at the Austin Convention Center in Austin, Texas, GDC Online continues as the leading worldwide event dedicated solely to discussing the development and business trends surrounding connected games, including casual titles, MMOs, virtual worlds, and social networking games. These full-day events will run alongside the show's main conference and will offer a comprehensive look at the design and programming philosophies of these three powerhouse companies. As seen in the event's schedule builder, the following are three sponsored events to be held at GDC Online 2011. As part of the design track, World of Warcraft studio Blizzard Entertainment will host the GDC Online exclusive special one-off tutorial aimed at designers and writers, the World of Warcraft developing franchise narrative in the transmedia age. The full day of content sees Blizzard Entertainment's writers and story developers, the creative minds behind Diablo, StarCraft, and Warcraft, focusing on various elements of the company's hit franchises, and kicked off by an introduction from the company's VP of Creative Direction, Chris Metzen. Other sessions include a panel on the developmental payoff of creating narrative content in ancillary and licensed media from the company's Mickey Nielsen and James Wall, and two-part design masterclass from World of Warcraft lead quest designer Dave Kosoff. Other sessions include a discussion between Chris Metzen and game and transmedia writing veteran Flint Transformers Chronicles of Riddick, on the peaks and valleys of creating and sustaining a living, breathing franchise universe, and a final panel featuring all of the senior Blizzard veterans. For more information on this special event, please look at the GDC Online Schedule Builder. All right, so in addition, web giant Google will host its own sponsored video game-centric Google Developer Day, featuring a number of talks dedicated to the company's tools and technologies, including App Engine and more, with full details newly available. Confirmed lectures include the company's Christian Schalk on how to build kick-ass social games on in the cloud, Greg Tavares on WebGL Rocks, why you should be using WebGL, Colt McAnalys on Native Clients is Ready for Games, Are You?, and Lily Thompson on cross-platform gaming programming with PlayIn. Also offering a programming-centric deep dive for a full day is Unity Technologies' Unity Day, Track Day, featuring a series of presentations and workshops surrounding the company's popular Unity engine. These sessions will span introductory material to more advanced topics aimed at seasoned professionals, including partner companies such as OpenFaint and Mixamo, as well as Unity's Brian Brunig and Distribution with Union. More details from the all-day event, I'm going to lose my voice, are available via the GDC Online website. The day joins a fourth separate GameSpy Technology Tutorial Day devoted to building iconic online games, with more details to be confirmed soon. In addition to this trio of sponsored events, GDC Online recently unveiled a handful of new sessions within the main conference, featuring talks on Ubisoft Blue Bytes, The Settlers Online, Mindy Candy's Mashi Monsters, and a panel on raising venture capital. Overall, featured speakers from GDC Online encompass major online firms such as Riot Games, Zynga, Nexon, CCP, Gazillion, PopCap, RockU, Playdom, BioWare Austin, and many, many more. They do say, as a notable reminder, discounted early registration pricing for GDC Online passes, offering discounts of up to 40% on regular pass prices, will remain in effect until September 1st, which is tomorrow. All right, so for more information on GDC Online as, as the event takes shape, please visit the official GDC Online website, gdconline.com.
All right.
Yeah, I'm hoping we might actually get to that, maybe.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, this next story I'm going to read was just posted on gamespolitics.com a few minutes ago, actually.
Yeah, we like these stories.
Yeah, me too. Microsoft withdraws patent infringement claim against Dattle. Dattle?
Wow, that's like first, because they've been suing everybody this year.
Yeah, I know. So they are finally withdrawing something, so here we go. According to Bloomberg, Microsoft plans to withdraw its patent infringement claims against Dattle Design and Development Limited over controllers for the Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
In response to the patent lawsuit, Dattle took it upon itself to simply redesign its controllers and stopped importing earlier versions of the TurboFire 2 Xbox 360 wireless that were at the center of Microsoft's complaint filed with the U.S. International Trade Commission in Washington. In a recent filing dated August 29th, Microsoft asked to withdraw the case. The company did say that it still plans to pursue compensation for past infringement through a civil lawsuit filed against Dattle last year. This is a quote for you. Dattle's voluntary exclusion of the accused products from the U.S. market has obviated the need to devote valuable public and private resources, the company said in its filing. Dattle filed an antitrust lawsuit in November against Microsoft, claiming the company was monopolizing the markets for accessories not sold directly with the Xbox. That case is ongoing. And actually, Microsoft has been accused of trying to create a monopoly in a lot of things.
Yes, they have.
So, Microsoft is a huge corporation, and yeah, I can totally see where somebody would think they're making a monopoly on something.
And I've heard the same thing about Google recently.
Yeah, I have too.
So, I don't know. Kind of one of those things. All right, and I'm going to end up losing my voice and try not to.
Please don't. We're going to have to ask you not to do that.
I know, right? He's trying to go. All right. Grab your ticket to a year of game add-ons with the Gears of War 3 Season Pass available the 20th of September. Microsoft and Epic announces initial Gears 3 DLC plans and how to guarantee a 33% discount on the game add-ons. The launch of Gears of War 3 on the 20th of September is still a few weeks away. But Microsoft and Epic Games are already announcing that there's more to come by the way of multiple game add-ons for the year's biggest console exclusive. Revealed today, the Gears of War 3 Season Pass entitles you to the first four installments of downloadable content that will roll out over the course of the next year, with the first releasing this November. Adding hours of campaign and multiplayer mayhem, these game add-ons will be must-haves for any Gears fans, and the Gears of War 3 Season Pass is your ticket to getting them at a discount the day they release. Available the 20th of September for 2,400 Microsoft points on Xbox Live Marketplace, the Season Pass represents a 33% savings versus purchasing the add-ons individually. Also includes an exclusive liquid metal weapon set. The spectacular conclusion to one of the most celebrated sagas in video games, Gears of War 3, has already surpassed 1.3 million pre-orders worldwide. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Making it the fastest pre-selling Xbox exclusive in the history of the platform. As further testament to the immense anticipation surrounding the game, 1.3 million players played more than 20 million matches in the Gears of War 3 multiplayer beta this spring, helping refine and polish the hotly anticipated juggernaut. All right, so developed by acclaimed studio Epic Games, Gears of War 3 launches in the UK on the 20th of September 2011 and is available for pre-order today in three distinct editions. Standard for £49.99 Lindens whatever, limited in which is £59.99 Lindens something, and Epic £99.99 Lindens pounds cookie something. For additional details on the game, please visit gearsofwar.xbox.com. Yay!
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 I also have something that was just posted on Games Politics a few minutes ago.
Oh yeah, what you got?
Yeah, T-I-G-A. Is that pronounced Tiga or just T-I-G-A? Do you know?
Either way.
We'll call it T-I-G-A just because. It's an acronym, so we'll roll with that.
Okay.
T-I-G-A comments on Zurich Insurance Report conclusions. UK video game industry trade group T-I-G-A said today that high technology businesses in the region were at risk of a brain drain and skill shortages, complicated and compounded by the existence of tax breaks in other countries. The group has long sought tax breaks and incentives for the video game industry, but the financial downturn and austerity measures in the UK forced the government to abandon any measures that were on the table at the time. Ooh, ouch. Ooh. TIGA made the comments following a report by Zurich Insurance, which revealed that 57% of the UK's mid-sized technology companies feel that they are at risk from losing skilled employees. Page 10 of the report offered this conclusion. Many qualified workers are exploring the opportunity to work abroad, with an estimated 67% of IT workers considering or having applied for a position overseas, according to a study by the IT Job Board. Portability of skills, coupled with higher salaries, and the chance to enhance lifestyle are cited as the key reasons for considering a move abroad. Experts warn the lack of students opting to study technology-related subjects, coupled with tax breaks offered by other countries to entice businesses, means we are compounding problems for the future. Dr. Richard Wilson, TIGA's, concluded that the report confirms three of the trade group's long-standing arguments. The UK is in a precarious position when it comes to brain drain because the region is losing highly skilled IT workers to other regions. Low numbers of students studying technology subjects such as computer science is creating recruitment problems for the industry, and tax breaks that help with game production in other regions are hurting the UK. And there's another quote for you. To surmount the challenges posed by the brain drain and skill shortages, we need to incentivize students to study subjects such as mathematics and computer science, Wilson said. Additionally, we need the coalition government to enable UK high-technology businesses to compete on a level playing field. Many of our key competitors benefit from generous tax breaks. The UK games industry does not. TIGA will continue to make the case for a tax break for games production and for improved research and development tax credits. To summarize that, basically, UK video game industry is losing skilled workers because they get less money there. Their lifestyle is not as good. So, and not as many people are studying it there. So, the UK government really needs to work on that, because if you lose all your IT people, your IQ, your average IQ of your country is going to drop. So work on that, peeps.
You're losing all your geeks, so your collective IQ is dropping.
Exactly.
That's horrible.
I should probably not say that, but whatever.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
I'm going to get now. That's Snow White at GamerGirlsRadio.com, just so you know.
Send us hate mail. We love it. All right. Mm-hmm. Serious Sam Double D launches on PC, sends you back into puberty all over again. Oh, my God. Publisher warns to watch your stack. Oh, my God.
You knew that was going to make me giggle, didn't you?
Yes. The time. time has come to stack some guns and let loose as Serious Sam Double D launches today in an explosion of bullets, flames, and absolute carnage. The first game in the Serious Sam indie series, Mommy's Best Games, Serious Sam Double D, is available now for download at a super serious $7.99 price through Steam, Get Games, Impulse, and Direct to Drive. Nathan Fouts, founder and lead designer at developer Mommy's Best Games, says, Serious Sam Double D contains all the wild action and the bizarre humor of the Serious Sam franchise and a classic 2D shooter. At the same time, we've definitely added our own touches to the Serious Sam series with a gun stacker, jump pad, and a host of brand new enemies for Sam to battle. All right, so Serious Sam Double D is full throttle action filled to the brim with trademark Serious Sam Awesome and the ridiculous creativity of developer Mommy's Best Games. Oh my God, 80,640 gun stacker combinations.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. 18 jaw-clenching campaign levels, 3 brutally awesome time periods, 25 bizarrely monstrous creatures, 70 secrets hidden across the game, ginormous boss encounters, 12 gut-punching challenge levels, 30 Steam achievements, and occasional boobs. Yay!
Yay!
Yay! Okay. Serious Sam Double D is digital testosterone. No lie, my sack dropped a full inch after playing for a couple of hours, claims Fork Parker, chief financial officer at Devolver Digital, publisher of Serious Sam 3, BFE, and the Serious Sam Indie series. He says, quote me, Serious Sam Double D will knock your ass through puberty all over again.
You are in trouble. Did you see the tweet from Corey? You are in trouble.
And I'm not sure. I'm sorry. They shouldn't quote stuff like that. All right. So, oh my God, that is awesome. I love you.
That's you are in trouble.
No.
I'm being good, and you're in trouble.
I didn't do it.
All right. Hot off the presses, we got another one that's actually just posted on IGN. This is not technically gaming, but it's geeky, so we're going to roll with it.
Okay.
Okay. U.S. government to block AT&T and T-Mobile merger. Yeah. Obvious concerns of a potential monopoly swept the world when news hit that AT&T was working to acquire T-Mobile. As it turns out, the Department of Justice feels the same way and has filed a civil antitrust lawsuit to block the transaction. Didn't I just read this?
You did.
I read this one about AT&T and T-Mobile.
Oh, no.
That was Microsoft, wasn't it? Okay.
Oh, it's Microsoft. My bad. You're
ooh,
right.
All right, cool. Anyway, moving on. Per Deputy Attorney General James M. Cole, the combination of AT&T and T-Mobile would result in tens of millions of consumers all across the United States facing higher prices, fewer choices, and lower quality products for mobile wireless services. Consumers across the country, including those in rural areas and those with lower incomes, benefit from competition among the nation's wireless carriers, particularly the 4 remaining national carriers. This lawsuit seeks to ensure that everyone can continue to receive the benefits of that competition.
Mm-hmm.
As it is now, there are 4 national wireless providers with AT&T Mobile as the sole nationwide GSM technology carriers. Should the acquisition go through, AT&T would be the only national GSM wireless provider. AT&T has issued a response to the matter stating, in part, "We are surprised and disappointed by today's action, particularly since we have met repeatedly with the Department of Justice and there was no indication from the DOJ that this action was being contemplated. We plan to ask for an expedited hearing so the enormous benefits of this merger can be fully reviewed. The DOJ has the burden of proving alleged anti-competitive effects, and we intend to vigorously contest this matter in courts."
Oh, wow.
I am on the side of the Department of Justice on this, actually.
I think so, too, yeah.
Yeah, because I have AT&T, and their service sucks.
Yes, and I have now with Sprint. I think Sprint. Yes,
Is it better?
I love it.
I totally switch.
Yeah, I live in Texas, and driving through the boonies, as soon as I got outside of town, I mean, we're talking, as soon as I hit the edge of town with AT&T, I'd lose connection. And I would have nothing until I got to the next town. Sprint, I can drive for hours and never lose connection. I love it.
Yeah.
And it's cheaper.
And the problem with AT&T is I roll through the boonies and I lose connection in my apartment.
Oh, that would irritate me.
It is irritating. I live in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's a big town.
It's not exactly the boonies, you know what I'm saying?
No, it's not. No, yeah, I had the same issue with AT&T, but I do live in the boonies. Different parts of my house, I just totally lose connection. Sitting at my computer, if I lean the right direction, yeah, horrible.
You have to, like, hold up your arm in a certain
yes.
in a certain position.
It was horrible. I will never go back to AT&T. Y'all can keep your iPhones. I love my Android. I love my Xperia Play. Oh, yes.
I love my iPhone. I don't like AT&T.
AT&T sucks.
It does. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what do we got? Being a pirate has never been... Oh, wait. Before I forget, Corey told me to mention this. Over on Gaminatrix right now, you need to go check it out in our trailer channel. Dead Island release trailer, the Peggy pre-order. It's brand new. It just came out today. Go check out this video. It is so hot. And it's Dead Island. Ah, it's beautiful. All right, for zombies, you know. Yeah, so Snow White, don't go see this because you don't like zombies.
No, I won't go see that.
This trailer is gorgeous. Oh, I love the graphics. I cannot wait to play this. All right, so now I mentioned it. It's not going to go back to my story. Being a pirate has never been so much fun. The feisty female pirate with an epic story to tell.
Arr, matey.
Female pirate. That's so awesome.
That's exciting.
Uh-huh. Captain Morgaine and the Golden Turtle. The new adventure game from Wizard Box and Reef Entertainment is getting shipshape for its launch in the fourth quarter this year on PlayStation 3, PC, Wii, and the DS. Together with beautifully rendered 1080p HD environments for the PC... for the PC and the PS3. It is Morgaine's story, which will keep both landlubbers and sea dogs alike enthused with its colorful characters and immersive storyline. Speaking of, there are screenshots up on Gaminatrix. I put them up this morning. It's really pretty. All right, so written and developed by Steve Ince of Broken Sword and So Blonde fame, Captain Morgaine and the Golden Turtle is the epic tale of Morgaine Castillo, the young daughter of the renowned pirate Alessandro Castillo, and how she grows up to become the most fearsome pirate of the Caribbean and her exciting journey to discover the mysterious treasure of the Golden Turtle. We first meet Morgaine when she is 8 years old, living with her mother on Bounty Island while her father is sailing the high seas. When her mother dies, her father, heartbroken, takes Morgaine away with him on his adventures. Upon her 17th birthday, Morgaine is told to find a crew of her own and a cargo to sail with. To the feisty and confident young woman, this sounds straightforward, but in the dangerous waters of the 17th century Caribbean, this is more difficult than even she realizes. However, along the way, we find out that her long-lost uncle is still alive, so she forges ahead and begins the journey for her...
Hello? Oh, I think we lost Ginger. Oh, man. Okay. Let's try to get Ginger back. Hold on. Uh-oh. You guys might be stuck with just me. Okay, well, I don't even know if I'm recording, but we're going to continue, just in case I am. Yeah, dude, so we're going to read another one for you, because it's almost that time. Oh, let's see what I got. Totally caught me off guard, dude. All right, Portal 2 does better on PC than Left 4 Dead. This is via GamesPolitics.com. When it comes to Portal 2, it seems that most gamers prefer the game on PC and via Steam, according to Valve Software. That's according to Valve's Gabe Newell, who talked at length with Gamasura in a recent interview on a variety of topics. On the other end of the spectrum, and somewhat surprising, PC gamers didn't enjoy Left 4 Dead as much as console users did, at least when using sales as a metric for popularity. Valve founder Gabe Newell used these examples to illustrate why his company doesn't pigeonhole games into console or PC-only categories. Naturally, some games, such as DOTA 2, just work better on the PC, but with a game series like Left 4 Dead and Portal, choosing a particular platform over another makes a lot less sense. Newell also said that it is almost impossible to predict on what platform a given title will find popularity and success. This is a quote from him. We've never had a situation where we said, we really, really want to build something that is more popular for the console guys, because usually we have a bunch of other higher priority problems we want to solve. So we're glad that people want to play our games wherever they want to play. So that was Portal is doing better on the PC than Left 4 Dead, which doesn't really surprise me, because Left 4 Dead seems more like a console game to me. I'm not sure why. Let's see if I can get Ginger back. Hold on. Doop, 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 doop. Okay. Apparently not. Anyway, it is about that time, so we're going to play some music and take a break, and hopefully I'll be back with the rest of the news. What do I want to play today? Let's see.
Okay.
Are you back?
I think I am, maybe.
Are you sure?
Well, I'm on my phone at the moment, so, yeah.
Oh, I got you. All right, well, we're about to take a break, so let me play some music as soon as you know what? I don't even know. This one to do.
Awesome.
Welcome back, guys. It is the last part of the show where we're not exactly streaming live, but we are still going to do some news for you. Ginger, are you here?
I am here.
Okay, girl, don't ever do that to me again.
Trust me, I was not happy. All of a sudden, I was reading the story and I heard it go do-do-do. I was like, crap.
I was suddenly on air by myself. I didn't know what to do. I just read another story.
Oh, you did good. You did good.
I was all lonely. Don't ever do that to me again.
Horace is up on Twitter right now. He's like, it's now the Snow White TG on the show.
No. Please don't say that.
Oh, I'm sure you were doing just fine. So how far did I drop immediately or?
Yes, it was in the middle of a sentence. You just were gone.
Great.
And I was like, oh, hello. I thought it was me. Oh my gosh.
It wasn't you. It was me. Stupid internet. All right. So yeah. Anyways, it's Capture More Game and the Golden Turtle, and it's set to set sail the fourth quarter of 2011 on that story. It is up on GameAndAtrix.com if you want to go check out some of these screenshots, which were very pretty. All right. I'm going to lose my voice. Hold on. This weather is going to kill me.
Did we lose you again, or did you mute yourself?
You muted myself.
Okay, don't do that to me.
I'm trying not to. Firefox is being a brat. All right, feel the rhythm, beat the mystery. Forget the Paris you know and prepare for a whole new adventure on the Nintendo 3DS. Sega of America and Sega Europe today announced Rhythm Thief and the Emperor's Treasure exclusively for Nintendo 3DS. In Rhythm Thief and the Emperor's Treasure, players are immersed in the mysterious rhythmic adventure in the city of Paris, recreated in stunning 3D vision on Nintendo's new handheld console. Pump up the tempo in early 2012 with the most mysterious musical adventure to hit the Nintendo 3DS yet. Gary Knight, Senior Vice President of Marketing at Sega Europe and Sega of America, says, Rhythm Thief and the Emperor's Treasure blends rhythm, puzzles, and a compelling story set in one of the world's most exciting cities in a way that has never been seen before. This unique blend makes creative use of the Nintendo 3DS technology, offering an engaging, challenging, and most importantly, fun experience throughout. All right, so Rhythm Thief and the Emperor's Treasure sees players enter the secret life of Raphael, infamous among Parisians as an honorable thief for stealing famous works of art, only to return them days later. Dive into Raphael's world and help him find the wristlet of Tiamat to unmask the mystery behind his father's disappearance. While unraveling the truth, players will encounter an assortment of different different rhythm challenges the master. Tap the screen, swipe the stylus, and control the gyro to the beat of the music to maneuver Raphael through the unique streets of Paris, brought to life by stylish animations and vibrant 3D maps and landscapes. Rhythm Thief and the Emperor's Treasure offers a Rhythm Thief and the Emperor's Treasure offers enjoyable single-player experience, as well as toe-tapping multiplayer, and uses Street Pass. Unearth the clues hidden behind treasures scattered around Paris. Call on your sense of rhythm and use all your puzzle-solving skills to help Raphael get to the bottom of the mystery. All right, so for more information, you can visit the official site at sega.com/rhythmthief. Yay! Or you can go over to GameNatrix.com and find that link, because it's already up for you.
And you know you want to go to GamingMatrix.com because that's just the best site ever.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so I have a story that's not exactly an uplifting story.
Huh?
Yeah, but we're going to do it anyway. It's concerning the Ubisoft game, The Call of Juarez, The Cartel.
Uh-oh.
It's talking about, is this game exploiting a real-life tragedy? On the afternoon of February 5th, 2011, four male high school students wandered onto a used car lot in Mexico's Ciudad Juarez, lured over from a nearby taco stand by a set of flashy wheel rims. As the teenagers admired the rims, a group of armed and menacing young men, narcotraficantes by the looks of them, walked up and demanded to know where they could find the owner of the dealership. When they received no answers from the teenagers, the armed group simply opened fire, slaughtering three of the students where they stood. Police investigators later found more than 60 bullet casings on the ground nearby. In virtually any other city in the world, a brutal crime like this would be headline news. Yet, in drug cartel-dominated Ciudad Juarez, it was just business as usual. 2 days later, amid this atmosphere of very real suffering, Ubisoft announced its plans to release Call of Juarez, The Cartel, a modern shooter that takes the border drug violence as its inspiration. Almost immediately, politicians, civic leaders, family members of cartel victims, and countless other voices from both sides of the border erupted in outrage. The game, they say, exploits a horrific tragedy that continues to destroy innocent lives every day. Its very existence is an insult to those who have suffered through the actual events. As one man wrote on the cartel's Facebook discussion page, "Doesn't it seem a little socially irresponsible to capitalize and or glorify what is actually happening?" because of the illegal drug trade in North America. For many, the horrific violence of the Mexican drug war simply isn't a permissible subject for a video game. The Polish developer Techland, which created the game as the third entry in its Western-themed Call of Juarez franchise, describes The Cartel as an entertainment product akin to an action movie, one that bears only incidental similarity to true events. "We aren't making a game about a real-life conflict," Techland spokesman, I can't pronounce his name, Krakowiak, said via email. "The game is purely fictional and it never tries to pretend otherwise. But this argument has won over a few critics who care only about the cartel's core subject matter, not its ratio of truth to fiction." In many areas of Mexico, including the entire state of Chihuahua, politicians voted unanimously to ban the game outright. The game was released in July of this year. IGN reviewed it at 4.5 or bad. Controversies about games aren't new, of course. Conflicts between the mainstream and the gaming community break out several times a year now, with the clockwork regularity of passing comments. Typically, these battles follow a predictable arc. Politician and talking heads, knowing virtually nothing about games and therefore assuming that the goal of each one is to rack up points by brutally murdering puppies, vow to denounce those who would expose the nation's children to violence and depravity. Gamers, forgetting how unsettled it is to the rest of the world that they spend so many hours chainsawing aliens in half, complain about political correctness and the mainstream's inability to see that it's just a game. The two sides talk past each other, and media soon moves on to a new scandal, and the controversy withers away without even having hurt the game's sales. But the firestorm over Call of Juarez, The Cartel, belongs to a new breed of controversy, one that has included other recent games like Medal of Honor, and that currently in limbo is 6 Days in Fallujah.
According to critics, these titles aren't just offensive because of gore or foul language. Instead, such games are morally revolting at their very core because they take real-life conflicts in which people are suffering and transform them into interactive entertainment products. Contemporary settings like the Middle East Wars or the Ciudad Juarez cartel violence ought to be off-limits for developers, these opponents say, because it is impossible to create a video game about a real conflict without exploiting and trivializing the pain of victims. Gamers have two possible responses to the charge. One is to insist, yet again, that something like Call of Juarez, the cartel, is just a game and thus shouldn't be taken too seriously, which isn't an argument so much as a refusal to think honestly about the ethical issues that these games provoke. The other more responsible reply is to contend that games, like movies or books, are perfectly capable of saying something profound and respectful about real conflicts and that, moreover, mainstream America attaches an unfair stigma to the word game. After all, when the Iraq-themed The Hurt Locker, or the cartel-based traffic hit theaters, no one accused them of being exploitive. Why should games be any different? Opponents point out that games are different because they are interactive, they involve player intention, and their very structure requires a winner and a loser. Video games may well have the potential to depict real conflicts with grace and intelligence, but if they're going to pull this off, they have some major structural obstacles to overcome first. The very same things that make a game, it turns out, may well stand in the way of rendering real conflict in a responsible way. This was actually on IGN,
mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I agree. That
I agree to a point.
I agree to the point that it's too soon.
Mm-hmm.
This is going on right now. So the pain that the victims feel and the family of the victims feel is ongoing. It's raw. It's like rubbing salt or lemon juice in an open wound.
Mm-hmm.
It's too soon. Too real. It's just not gonna work.
I don't know. On one hand, I see what you mean. On the other hand, I want to know what these people who are crying about these games, who are upset about these games being so revolting, what are they doing to actually change the real ongoing situation down there in Mexico? I hate to say it, but maybe these games are bringing this conflict, this horrible war that's been going on for years right at our own border that we've just been kind of off in la-la land ignoring.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this will bring it to light, and maybe this will actually light a fire under somebody's butt to get something done, to do something. I mean, we're off fighting wars on the other side of the planet when we should be maybe handling stuff closer to home.
Oh, I agree with that, but the problem is not everyone playing the game is going to take it to that level.
That is true, but maybe that one person that does play it will think of something and will start acting on it.
Playing the devil's advocate, I think the main problem is that the critics are worried about the majority of the people that don't take mm-hmm. that don't take it to that intellectual level or take it mm-hmm. to that responsible level and just revel in the violence of it. You know what I mean?
There is that, but I don't know.
No,
I think,
totally see your point.
Yeah.
And that would be a good thing about the game, yes, mm-hmm. if I thought that was
yeah.
the main thing that was going to happen, but it's totally not.
No. No, unfortunately, most people are going to see it as a game and disassociate themselves with it and not actually look at the broader picture. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We got a couple of minutes left, don't we?
Yeah, you can read something happy after
I'm
my depressing
trying,
life.
I'm trying. Oh, my Firefox is being a dirty little...
Uh-oh.
All right, so IndiePub offers a first look at Catapult for Hire, whimsical medieval physics-based action strategy game soon to be released for PC and Mac. All right, so it's like this is coming fall of 2011 for PC and Mac. Created by indie developer Pixel Mega, Catapult for Hire combines immersive physics-based action, strategy, and role-playing elements with the fun and whimsy of medieval catapult combat. Catapult for Hire was a winner in IndiePub's third Independent Game Developers Competition Awards, and that took place late 2010. Pixelmega's Tyrone Henry says, "My goal is to create a sense of childlike wonder where the world was at your fingertips and it was your little plaything. The simple act of throwing a projectile through 3D space in Catapult for Hire brings it all back. There are a lot of worthwhile experiences in the world, and I think that feeling like a kid again is one of them. Besides that, catapults are just awesome." Hell yeah, I love me some catapults.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing boulders at stuff? Man. Mm-hmm.
Yes, with my name in Dark Edge Camelot. Have catapult, will travel. Or have ran, will travel.
Overlord 2, you get to use catapults.
Crap. No, stop. Script. Hold on, something's going on. Go back! All right, so there we go. My Firefox totally just like skipped to a whole other page on me. That was odd. All right, so in Catapult Fire, the medieval economy has collapsed, and being a knight is not nearly as lucrative as it used to be. Even so, it seems that people, even ogres and fairies, are willing to pay good hard gold for a decent siege, so Sir Noddingsforth has decided to break out his rusty old catapult and perform some freelance catapultry for fun and profit. He protects villagers, provides creative agriculture support, helps test a few experiments for an insane scientist, and competes in the Colosseum for fame and fortune. In the Catapult for Hire's campaign mode, you'll quite literally command a catapult for hire, taking on odd jobs and competing in more than 50 levels of high-flying, smash-tastic fun to become the greatest catapultist in the land, and even outer space. As you complete jobs, you'll earn gold, collect items, and discover hidden artifacts that can be combined to craft better catapults. In challenge mode, you'll test your tossing skills by toppling towers and solving puzzles with unique and varied projectiles. Fish upgrade your hook and even Fish upgrade your hook and even integrate acquired items to improve your catapult for better and sometimes more interesting results. All right, so Catapult for Hire will be available fall 2011 for PC, Windows, Mac. For more information about Catapult for Hire, you can visit the game's website over at catapultforhire.com. And I think I've got some screenshots, maybe some screenshots up on GameMatrix.com. Go over and check
awesome.
It out.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome sauce.
Yay.
And it's that time.
Yay. Maybe we have two lives. I like her.
I do too. All right, guys, tune in tomorrow for another Lunchtime with Ginger and Corey. If Corey is still under the weather, Snow White will be back. If she is not, then you will be blessed with her presence.
Mm-hmm. Yay! We miss you, Corey.
Miss you, Corey. It's all Ginger's fault.
Not my fault. You know the druid style. He asked me, do you know about the Emerald Dream? If you're talking about my eyes, they're just flattery supreme. Yes, they gleam, but that's not what I meant. The dream's a place where all world's nature's content. Later, boys and girls. Mm.